Welcome to Tube Talk, the show dedicated to helping you become a better video creator so you can get more views, subscribers, and build your audience. Brought to you by vidIQ. Download for free at vidIQ.com.
Oh, yes! Welcome back to another episode of Tube Talk presented by vidIQ. I am your host, Viper, the man about tech, executive producer here at the IQ. And this week, we're going to start off the podcast just like we did last week with a shout out from the Twitters. I tell you guys, if you want to be potentially on the podcast to tweet at vidIQ, make sure you're using the hashtag TubeTalk and your tweet can have a chance to make it on the podcast. So this week, we have my man, Kenyon Comedy, and he's asking a very interesting question. The tweet says, the energy guy will be on the mic for a big brand at VidCon once again, but will I meet the only other energy god on planet Earth at Viper? So Kenyon wants to know if your boy Viper, executive producer at the IQ, is going to be in attendance at this year's VidCon, which is only in a few weeks out in Anaheim, California. And the answer, Kenyon, is yes. Your boy Viper will be at VidCon this year. So if you all are going to be at the conference this year and you happen to stroll by the vidIQ booth, you might see a wild Viper roaming the booth. So definitely come up and say hello. We can take a picture. We can do a chat or whatever. But I will be in attendance this year at VidCon. It will be my very first VidCon ever. So please come up and say hello. Moving on to what is happening with YouTube. YouTube is making a major, major change to the analytics. And I know a lot of other creators out there are going to be so happy with this particular change. As you all know on YouTube, there are right now three different types of content that you can put out on your YouTube channel. You have long videos, which are basically called videos on demand. You have live streams, and you have YouTube Shorts. Up until now, the analytics for all of these types of content have been jumbled together into one set of analytics, which really didn't make sense, and it kind of messed up the analytics for channels as a whole, and it was just confusing. And if you are a creator who works with brands, definitely difficult to get a feeling of how your video will perform for a brand if all the analytics for all the video types are jumbled together. So what YouTube is starting to do is separate analytics for the different types of content. They're rolling it out in a few weeks or whatever, but starting from now, I guess, regular long-form video will have their own set of analytics. Live streams will have their own set of analytics. YouTube Shorts will have their own set of analytics. So instead of having one pile of analytics for all the different content types, YouTube is separating them out into their own categories, which is absolutely incredible and amazing. This is going to help us so much understand our analytics better. And like I said, for those creators who negotiate and work with brands, now they will be better equipped to have the correct information when they go to negotiate brand deals. Thank you, YouTube. This is a change that we've been talking about and asking for a while now. I'm glad to see that they're finally beginning to roll this out. So be on the lookout for these changes. Apparently, this is going to happen where the Reach tab in the Creator Studio Analytics is currently sitting. The Reach tab is going to be replaced with tab called Content. And then you can get the analytics for the particular type of content that you're interested in from that Content tab. This is a major, major, major go. As my man Flossy Carter would say, I am down for this. Which brings me to the podcast this week. You know, a lot of creators, when they're first starting out, they have a microphone or they're using the internal microphones or whatever device they happen to use, and they don't have proper understanding of audio and how it works. So what your boy Viper did, I went out and I got one of the brightest, smartest audio minds on YouTube. His name is Bandrew. You might better know him as Podcastage, and he is going to be on the podcast here in a moment to talk to us about audio and understanding the importance of audio, why it's so critical, and why, in actuality, audio is more important than video. That's right. I will say it for the people in the back. I will repeat what I just said. In actuality, audio is more important than video. And you're going to find out firsthand why, in this particular podcast, why audio is so important and why you need to understand the basic fundamentals of having good audio for your videos. So that is going to be the crux of today's podcast. It's going to be a very good podcast, especially if you're not familiar with audio and everything that goes with it, because trust me when I tell you, there is a lot that goes into having good quality audio. So with that said, let me bring in my man Podcasting and let us teach you all a little bit about audio and what you need and what you can do, even when you're just starting out, to get the best possible audio for your videos. So let's roll to the podcast. Welcome back to Tube Talk, presented by vidIQ. And this week, we are hitting hard with audio goodness. I have the Sultan of Audio, one of the best audio tech creators on the platform, on the tube. My man, Bandrew, better known as Podcastage, is here. What's up, man? How you doing?
Doing all right, Viper. Thanks for having me back. I cannot believe it has been 2 years since we spoke. Absolutely bonkers.
It is bonkers, man. It is 2 years, way too long, but we all know how the past 2 years have been, so we'll let that slide. I'm glad to have you in the building. Thank you for making the time, man. I appreciate you.
My absolute pleasure. Always happy to help people get better audio.
No doubt. And I figured that this will be an important episode, especially for newer creators, because a lot of times they don't understand the importance of good audio or how to go about getting good audio when they don't have the budget and different things like that, which is kind of apropos to tonight, because you recently made a video, I think a couple of weeks ago, and the title of your video was literally "Audio is More Important Than Video." So can you take a minute or two or a couple of minutes to break that down and tell the people why you feel like audio is so much more important than video?
Absolutely. So the way that I describe it, or my justification for that statement, is how do we communicate the majority of information in online video? Through spoken word. Therefore, you need to make sure that your spoken word is captured clearly. There's nothing distracting in it, because that is how people are going to understand what you're talking about. That is how they are going to get every piece of information that you are conveying to them. There will obviously be exceptions there. There will be people who focus a lot on visual content. Photographers come to mind. If you're taking photographs, audio is clearly not going to matter. But if you're on YouTube, if you're doing podcasting, video podcasting, the audio is going to be the most important, because that is how you are conveying all the information. Think about this show. How are we conveying every piece of information? We don't have charts and graphs. We are speaking into microphones and telling you exactly what we want you to know.
Yep.
So that is why I think that audio is more important than video. And I was expecting to get a lot of pushback there. I was surprised. People are saying, I've been a videographer for 20 years. We all know this. Audio is at least 50% of the picture, if not more. So I was amazed by the feedback that I got.
And it's so interesting, because I was doing video audit today earlier on the vidIQ live stream. And there were a couple of times when we would start playing the video and the audio was terrible. And we're like, we can't deal with this. And we said so many times, but people will tolerate good audio but bad video, but they will not tolerate bad audio and good video. It's just, you got to have the audio on point for sure.
Yeah, because that's how you're conveying information. And if there is something distracting in the audio, if you're distorting the audio, if it's choppy, if you have a fan blowing right into the microphone, it's going to turn people off, because they won't be able to understand you. They won't hear your voice clearly. So they'll just move on. And that's something that I found in the comments as well, because I have clicked off of thousands of videos because the audio is bad. And maybe one or two videos over 15 years of watching online video because the actual visuals were bad. And I took a little bit of a survey in the comments, and most people said, I don't think I've ever clicked off of a video because of the visuals, but I click off of videos very regularly because the audio is so bad, because I can't understand it, because there's too much reverberation going on, because they're talking into the wrong side of the microphone, because it's actually painful to listen to. So people will move on. So you're absolutely right.
Now let's dig a little bit more deeper into that, because you talked about reverberation. You talked about clipping and different things like that. Now, a lot of times creators think that these are things that they can fix in post-processing. Like when they actually go to edit the audio, they feel like they can fix some of the stuff with editing the audio. But we know that, no, some things that make it into the audio cannot be fixed in post-processing, which is why it is so important that you have that stuff down while you're doing the actual recording of the audio, because there's something that post-processing just cannot fix.
Exactly right. There are some tools that will try to fix some of these issues, but you're going to be paying $1,000+ to get these plugins to remove a little bit of the distortion, a little bit of the clipping, to de-reverb your plugin, to remove those reverberations. It's going to cost you a lot of money. And it's not going to fix it really well. It's going to actually destroy the audio a little bit. It will make you harder to understand. It's going to degrade the quality of your voice. So if you invest a lot of money in your audio products, in your microphone, your interface, everything, why are you then going to spend even more money to make it sound worse? So the first step to getting great sounding audio is making sure the audio in the room is as good as you want it before you even hit record, before you do anything. That means shut off loud sound sources. Do you have an air conditioner? Shut it off. I did. It's kind of toasty. Doesn't help that I'm wearing a hoodie, but but shut off the air conditioner. Shut off the fans. Don't type on your mechanical keyboard while you're recording. You need to do all of these things to ensure that the audio going into the microphone is as good as it can possibly be.
Absolutely. Now, I want to talk into the different types of mic and different things like that here in a moment, but let's talk about what creators can do a little bit before they ever hit record, as you were alluding to, turning off fans or HVAC systems or making sure that your environment is as quiet as possible. Now, we know that creators that have been doing it for a longer period of time, they may be recording in sound-treated environment, but obviously newer creators are not going to have access to those resources. So, Bandrew, can you tell some of the newer creators out there what are some other things that they can do to get the best possible audio in their situation?
Yeah, as you mentioned, there are a lot of creators who have been doing it for a while who have sound treatment. That's just going to be big pieces of foam or big pieces of fabric on the wall that absorb the sound going around the room to stop it from reflecting around. That's what reverb is. You can find stuff around your home. You don't have to invest a lot of money. You can make your own sound baffling. So if you are recording, record in a room with a bed. That bed is going to absorb a lot of sound. Wow. If you have a comforter, lean that up against a wall or do something like that. That will absorb a lot of sound. If you want, go on Amazon. They're not the best, but you can buy some sound panels for $25, $50. Get a 12-pack. That will help a little bit. Or you can build your own. There's lots of videos online, a lot more affordable to do that. Then, as I mentioned, shut off all the sound sources around you that you don't need. Also, there's something with a microphone called a polar pattern. That tells you where on the microphone it's going to pick up audio. The microphones that you want are going to be cardioid, and that means it picks up audio in the front, rejects audio in the rear. So if you have a sound source in your room that you can't shut off, use that polar pattern to your advantage. So place the rear of the microphone and point it at the loud sound source. That will reject it the most. Then you could focus on getting the microphone a little bit closer. What that will do is improve your signal to noise ratio, your signal to background noise or ambient noise ratio. So let me go ahead and set my gain. I'm at 38 dB. I will go ahead and crank this up. Now I am about a foot and a half away from the microphone. I have a really well-treated room, so it's not going to sound too bad, but you should be able to hear a lot more of the room in the recording. So by moving the microphone closer and then decreasing your level, you are increasing the level of your voice to the sound of your voice bouncing around the room. So those are the main tips that I recommend. Get the microphone closer, set your gain appropriately, shut off loud sound sources, and use the polar pattern to your advantage.
Man, this is why I love talking to you, because you always bring the fire and you are so good at teaching people exactly what it is that you're trying to relate as it relates to audio. So thank you. You mentioned the gain. Can you please explain the concept of gain? Because that's something that a lot of creators run into when we're talking about microphones and levels. What is gain and how does it affect audio exactly?
Yeah, so microphones capture your voice or the sound source that you have in front of it. There's a diaphragm in there, and then it converts that physical audio, that sound wave, into an electrical signal. But that electrical signal is very, very quiet, so it needs to be amplified, needs to be brought up to make it louder. That's where a preamplifier comes into play. That's what's in every single audio interface. And the gain is just how we dictate or decipher or convey how much we are amplifying that signal. So currently, I am amplifying this microphone 38 decibels. And the thing that's important to remember or to focus on when you're setting your gain is when you are going into your computer, you want to make sure that you have headroom. I know this is getting into the weeds, but what headroom is it gives you a little bit of room, a little bit of, how do I want to phrase this? Gives you a little bit of wiggle room so you can get a little bit louder without distorting your audio. So I will go ahead and set my gain inappropriately. Oh. I have it set too high now. And oh my gosh, wait, I have a limiter on. It's not going to do it. Well, take my word for it. If you set your gain too high and then you get excited and loud, you will end up distorting your preamplifier and you cannot remove that from your recording. So when you're setting your gain, you should be shooting for around negative 12 to negative 6 decibels. And then once the audio is on your computer, then you will be able to amplify it after it's been converted onto your computer. You can use that in OBS. You can use any kind of post-processing software, Final Cut Pro, the Adobe one, whatever that is, any kind of digital audio workstation like Audacity, Logic Pro, Pro Tools, any of them.
I think the Adobe one called Audition, if I'm remember correctly.
Audition, yes. Thank you very much. So around negative 18 to negative 12, if you are uncertain how dynamic your voice is going to be, but if you know how much variation in level you have, if you know that you speak very monotone, maybe you don't need to have 18 decibels of headroom available. You can shoot for a negative 6 dB because you know you don't get loud.
Excellent breakdown, man. Appreciate you. So now let's get into the actual equipment, the microphones themselves. So when you start doing research on microphones, you will quickly run across the main two microphones that most creators and studio people talk about. You have your condenser microphones and your dynamic microphones. Can you please explain to our listener, Andrew, what is the difference between a dynamic microphone and a condenser microphone?
Absolutely. So a dynamic microphone is a passive microphone, meaning it doesn't require any power. A condenser microphone is an active microphone, meaning it requires power. That's not really important, but I want to put that out there. A condenser microphone is going to capture a much more realistic sound. It's going to be much more detailed, much more lively sounding, because it typically has a lot more top-end information. I'm using a condenser microphone right now. And something to remember about condensers, and this is very, very contentious, I'm sure this podcast will get a lot of hate. Generally speaking, condenser microphones tend to pick up more ambient sound, more room sound. So if you are in a completely untreated space, you might be able to find some exceptions here, but typically a condenser microphone will end up picking up more of the reverberations around your room, which will make your audio sound a bit more roomy. If you're in a $1 million studio, that can be amazing because the room is designed to sound incredible. If you're in a spare bedroom, it's going to sound like you're in a spare bedroom. Probably not going to be the optimal choice. That's why I have a bunch of sound treatment on my walls, so I can use condenser microphones and not have to worry about too much reverberation. Dynamic microphones, on the other hand, are passive. And generally speaking, I have to say that, generally speaking, dynamic microphones do better at rejecting the background noise. But there's also something to remember about dynamic microphones. They tend to be quieter because they are passive. So you'll need to get some kind of preamp that has sufficient power to amplify it. The microphone that most people think of when they think of a quiet dynamic microphone is the one that Viper is using right now, the Shure SM7B. One of the quietest microphones out there, but it sounds amazing. I love that microphone. It's one of my all-time favorites. But you will need to actually pay attention to the preamps that you're getting. Nowadays, most preamps in audio interfaces are more than sufficient. Even something like the M-Audio M-Track Solo, I think it is, that goes for about $50. That can drive the SM7B. Is it going to be the cleanest sound? Probably not, but you will be able to get by with it. Once you get to $150, $250 interfaces, you're good to go. You're golden. So those are the main differences. Condensers are going to sound more realistic and more lifelike and more exciting, but they will tend to generally pick up more of your room and more background noise. Dynamic microphones are going to be quieter. They're going to generally do a better job at rejecting the background noise. So if you're in a loud environment, that will probably, in most cases, be a better pick, but you will need to focus on the preamp that you're running them through.
Absolutely. And that is one of the main reasons why I chose to get a Shure SM7B, which is a dynamic microphone, because I don't have any sound treatment in my room. So because I don't have any sound treatment, the fact that this mic usually rejects anything that's not directly in front of it is good for me. But like Andrew said, it's kind of quiet as well. So in addition to purchasing the Shure SM7B, I also purchased something called a cloud lifter, which amplifies the gain, which makes the microphone a little louder, adds more bass to the sound. Even though I do have it going into something called the Rodecaster Pro, which is the whole podcast studio audio interface thing. So in theory, I probably don't even need the cloud lifter, but I still have it attached anyway, just to be on the safe side. But yeah, when you're thinking about a dynamic microphone, you definitely want to make sure that if you need something like a cloud lifter, that you do your research and make sure that whatever audio interface that you get, it is enough to power that dynamic microphone.
Two things there. First off, the cloud lifter shouldn't alter the sound, so it shouldn't be adding more bass, but it does amplify the signal, does make the signal louder.
Right.
And secondly, with the Rodecaster Pro, those don't have the greatest preamp, so you will be getting an improvement over the noise floor. So using the cloud lifter, you should be hearing a decrease in the amount of that is underlying the audio. So with that, it makes perfect sense.
Awesome. Definitely. But here's the thing. You don't need like top dollar microphones when you're first starting out. I mean, we could talk about Andrew's favorite microphone, the Blue Yeti, which I know he loves so much. I joked about it. I wrote a joke about this 2 years ago, but that is literally the YouTube starter microphone for most creators, the Blue Yeti. You can get one for, I think, anywhere from $50 to $100. But there are a bunch of other $50 to $100 microphones out there that you can get that will definitely do you well. So you have options out there. I think what's more important, even more important than the microphone, is the environment that you're going to be using the microphone in.
Absolutely. So Booth Junkie is another audio channel on YouTube, and he came up with, I don't know if he came up with it, but I heard it from him first. And it's been something that I've talked about with a couple of other YouTubers, but he said, if you have $1,000, you should spend $200 on a microphone and $800 on treating your room. Because the room, the environment that you're recording in, is going to have such a big impact on the recording. That is just handling the reflections. Earlier in this episode, we talked about all the other things that are in your environment that will impact the recording. The fan noise, the air conditioning, the HVAC, people yelling outside. Any of that stuff is your environment as well. So you do need to focus on everything going on around the microphone, because it will pick it all up.
This episode of Tube Talk is brought to you by vidIQ's Competitors Tool. Checking in on what your competition is doing can be a great way to keep up with trends in your area of expertise. If you have vidIQ installed, you can find this tool on the left-hand sidebar within the YouTube studio, and from there you can begin adding channels as your competitors. I like to select a range of channels, from the ones that I find to be the leading voices in my niche, all the way down to channels that get similar views to my own. The way that this helps me personally is that I can start to actually detect patterns in the types of videos that my competitors are releasing, which helps me discover some fresh ideas that are already proven to be working. The vidIQ extension works in both Chrome and Firefox browsers, and you can download it for free at vidIQ.com.
Now, I am curious. You said that you are using a condenser microphone. Is there any particular reason why you are choosing to use a condenser microphone over a dynamic microphone?
Because I'm going to be reviewing this microphone, and it was on the stand. So I had to use it and get a little bit more experience with it before I actually complete the review. But I do really enjoy condenser microphones. I understand for a lot of people, it's not going to be ideal. But at the same time, I can go back to old familiar for me. Old familiar is the SM7B, and I love how it sounds on my voice. It benefits my voice quite a bit. So I'm using this because I need to get familiar with it and review it. But I can go back to the SM7B anytime and just re-fall in love with it every single time I put it on the stand.
Yeah, I'm joking with him, but he can literally use any microphone he wants. He's set up to do that properly. I want to go back to something that you kind of briefly touched on earlier, and that is polar patterns and what they mean for microphones. Now, you mentioned cardioid, which means that the microphone pretty much rejects everything that's behind it and picks up most of the stuff that's happening right in front of it. What are some of the other polar patterns that are out there in the world as it relates to a microphone?
How fitting that I'm on this microphone, because this is a multiple polar pattern microphone.
Ooh.
I can give you some examples.
Okay.
So currently, I am on the cardioid polar pattern, which means it picks up in the front and it should reject a lot from the rear.
Yep.
Let me go ahead and switch this over. This probably has two of the other most popular polar patterns. Sorry if there's a click. Now, it should take a second to switch over. Now we are on the omnidirectional pattern, and that means as we move around the microphone, it should still be picking up my voice all the way around the microphone. So if you're in a really great sounding room, this is going to be something you want. If you have people all around the microphone doing gang vocals or screaming, going to be the option. And the other one is the bidirectional or figure eight. That picks up audio in the front and the rear, and then the sides of the microphone are completely dead. Picks up no audio. But then when I get to the rear, here I am again. So those are three of the most popular polar patterns, the most common. Cardioid, picking up in the front, nothing in the rear. Figure eight, picking up in the front and the rear and rejecting from the sides. And omnidirectional, which picks up audio all the way around the microphone.
Gotcha.
Now, I was going to ask you earlier about which microphone is better, a condenser or a dynamic, but I think that's probably not the right question. Because I'm guessing it really just depends on what environment that you're in.
Yeah, it's going to come down to the environment that you're in and what your personal preferences are. Because I know a lot of people will pick a dynamic. I know I will pick the SM7B because it is a darker sounding microphone. But other people will say, I don't want that. It sounds dull. It sounds dead. I don't want that. I want the live sound of a condenser. I want all that top end information. So it's really going to come down to individual case-by-case instances. Yeah. Let's go with that.
There you go. All right, let's talk about that instrument that you're using that's in front of the microphone. I believe that is what we call a pop filter. So can you explain what the purpose of that is?
Absolutely. I'm going to hate myself for doing this, but there is something called a plosive. And what that is when you say a P, a B, anything where your lips purse and then open up, a gust of air will be leaving your mouth. And a plosive is when that gust of air hits the diaphragm of the microphone. I'm going to do my test here. Please bring pizza pronto. Please bring pizza pronto. When I say the P's, you can hear just an impact where a gust of air hits the diaphragm. A pop filter is going to disperse that. So please bring pizza pronto. Please bring pizza pronto. It disperses that air and it saves the diaphragm because if you're really bad with it, it can't actually damage the microphone. But more importantly, it saves your listeners' ears because that's the main goal of all the gear that we buy, at least in my opinion. It's to make sure the audio that we are providing for our listener or viewer is as easy to listen to as it can possibly be, because we want them to have the best viewing and listening experience.
Absolutely. Definitely. Now, lucky for me, the Shure SM7B comes with a built-in pop filter, so I didn't have to go out and buy any additional equipment. Actually, it's funny because it comes with the one that's already on the microphone, and then it comes with an even bigger one in the box, so it comes with two, actually, which is pretty cool. Okay, so I want to talk about cable, because you have microphones that are USB microphones that just plug directly into your computer or wherever they got to plug into via USB. But then you have microphones like the Shure here that you need XLR cable. Is there any sound difference between using a USB mic or using a microphone that requires XLR? Like, what's going on with all that? Why is there a different cable for that?
So USB microphones essentially have the microphone and a USB audio interface built into one package. So that's the main difference between XLR and USB mics. The reason why you would want to go with a USB mic, it's easy. Typically, it is plug and play. You don't have to worry about getting a XLR cable and then an audio interface and focusing on all of that. The downside, though, is it is all one package. So if you want to upgrade any of those components, you're throwing it out, you're selling it, you're buying a new thing. With XLR mics, you can buy the microphone, you can buy the cable, you can buy an audio interface, you can buy an outboard preamp. It is going to be a bit more expensive. It's going to be a bit more complex, but it's more module and it allows you to control the exact sound that you're going for. Another thing that I think is a drawback for USB mics is because it is all one package and typically they are more affordable, that means that the components that you're getting are going to be a lower quality. So you're going to be getting slightly lower quality capsules, slightly lower quality analog to digital conversion and digital to analog conversion, lower quality preamps, all of that. So those are the main differences and why you would want to go with each of them. Ease and plug of play for USB or more complex, more expensive, but more control over your sound and more upgradability of your sound with the XLR route.
You know what it sounds like, Andrew? It sounds like iOS versus Android. That's literally what it sounds like.
A little bit. I had to step away from general tech. Is the battle still going strong?
Not as bad as it used to be, but it's one of those things that will never die.
Okay. My mindset on all of it is I don't care what you use, if you use iOS, Android, USB, XLR, dynamic condenser. All of these things are just tools to help us do our job as well as we can.
Yep.
So if a condenser microphone, a USB multi-pattern Yeti condenser microphone is the best fit for you because you think that helps you do your job better, I'm not going to actually hate on you. I may poke fun at you a little bit, but it's not going to be true disgust or true disliking of it. It's just going to be in good fun.
Definitely. Okay, I'm going to need your help with this because I want to go a little bit deeper into audio interfacing because we've talked about it a few times in this podcast, but I don't think we quite explained what it is. As I understand it, an audio interface is basically what helps the microphone communicate with whatever you want to plug it into to record the audio. Am I right on that, or is it a little bit more nuanced than that?
That's a great way to summarize it. Absolutely. So if you're using an XLR microphone, that's converting a sound wave into an electrical signal, but that is an analog signal. Your computer doesn't know what the analog signal is. So what an audio interface is, it will have the preamplifier, which amplifies that electrical signal up, makes it louder, and then it has an analog to digital converter. That's going to convert the microphone's analog signal into ones and zeros, so your computer or iOS device or Android device knows what it is. So it essentially just converts the analog signal to a digital signal.
Gotcha. Okay. Yep. Makes sense. And obviously, again, with a USB microphone, you don't have that problem because everything is built in. You plug it in and it works automatically. So.
Exactly. So it has that interface built into the microphone. It has that analog to digital converter and that preamp built into that single package.
Okay. Appreciate that explanation. So as I've tried to guide this podcast tonight to be helpful for newer creators who are just getting into content creation to help you all get the best audio possible, Andrew, you've been doing audio for a long time here. What are some of the biggest mistakes that you see newer creators make when it comes to audio in their video?
One of the biggest that I see is setting your gain incorrectly. That's where your audio just ends up distorting and sounding terrible. I tried to make it as simple as I could. I do have a video outlining it in much better and much more clear examples. So Viper, I'm sure we'll be able to link that somewhere so you can check that out. Watch that, set your gain properly. The next one is the most egregious, and I actually find it offensive. People speaking into the wrong side of the microphone.
Oh, yes.
You'll see this with the SM7B where people will speak into the side of it. You'll see it especially on the Blue Yeti where people will talk into the top of it. And the reason I find that so offensive, people have spent $150 on the Yeti or $100 on the Yeti, or with the SM7B, $400. They didn't take the time to understand the equipment that they have. That's the first thing that you ought to be doing when you get a new piece of equipment. Read the manual. I can't remember what the acronym is. Is it RTFM? That's the old tech support thing. Read the effing manual. That's the first thing that people should be doing. So set your gain properly, understand the equipment that you have, and then it's really going to be trial and error. It doesn't need to be perfect. It's going to be incremental upgrades. Find one thing that you don't like about your audio every single time that you record. If you think there's too much room tone, too much reverberation, maybe look and see if you have any comforters lying around that you can put on the wall or get the microphone a little bit closer. Is it too much of your voice and too little of the room? Back it up. Make these minor adjustments. And don't be afraid to experiment. It ought to be fun what you're doing, the recording. So those are three things that I think are really important for people getting into audio. Don't expect it to be perfect. Make minor adjustments and improve it every single time you record. Set your levels properly and understand the equipment that you're using, because once you understand the equipment, it's going to be much easier for you to get that really good sounding audio.
I want to go back and highlight what you just said, understanding your equipment. Obviously, like Andrew said, I have the Shure SM7B, but I just didn't go out and buy it. I did research about how it would sound, what I would need to buy with it, because you just can't buy a Shure SM7B by itself and be good to go. I had to buy the Shure SM7B microphone itself. I had to buy the cloud lifter to amplify the gain. Then I had to buy an audio interface to make it all work together. I think a lot of creators, they don't do the due diligence with the research about the different microphones that they want to buy. And you end up looking a little silly when you buy all the stuff or whatever, and you don't understand how to properly use it or what you need to go along with it. So please, when you're considering audio equipment, do your research. It's so important.
Yeah, that's a great point. Don't follow the trends. Don't follow trends, because what is right for somebody else may not be right for you. You need to understand what you're buying, because you might be buying something that will make your audio sound worse. So make sure you understand what you're looking at. Make sure you understand what your specific needs are, and then look for a tool that will fulfill those needs. Don't just go out and say, everybody's using the Yeti, everybody's using the SM7B, that's what I'm going to buy, because it may not be what you end up needing. Great point, Viper. Love it.
Definitely. Yeah, don't be like Viper. Don't buy the SM7B because it's the most popular microphone. Don't do that. But if you do that, do your research, though. Do your research.
Absolutely.
Okay, so probably one of the biggest mistakes I made early in my creative career with audio is using the internal microphones of my iPad, because I was just starting out. I was doing everything on the iPad. I was filming the video with the iPad cameras. I was doing audio with the iPad internal microphones. And somebody messaged me in Discord when they were like, Viper, we love what you're doing, but your audio sounds like you're underwater, man. You got to do something about it. So I went back and I listened to the videos. I'm like, you know what? They have a point. And that is when I went out and I brought the Blue Yeti. So Banju, let's talk about some of the entry-level options that creators have at their disposal if they want to get past using internal audio. What are some of the best beginning-level external microphones that you could think of?
So as far as basic microphones, beginner microphones, I think there's a reason the Blue Yeti is popular. First off, you can go to Best Buy and buy it.
Yes.
So that's probably, if people are outside of the U.S., Best Buy is a typical electronics store. You can go to any electronics store and buy the Blue Yeti. But there are great alternatives that are cheaper that I think are going to be better for people. The first one being plug-and-play USB microphone, the Samson Q2U. That's an XLR and a USB dynamic microphone. So first off, it's dynamic. Does a really good job with background noise rejection. Secondly, USB, plug right into your computer, start recording, but it also has an XLR port. So it gives you this upgrade path. If you find out that you don't like having just the plug and play and you want to get an outboard preamp, now you're able to go buy that and you don't need to replace the microphone. So that's one of the most common recommendations that I have. And a lot of people in my server have for people who say, I have a $60 or $70 budget. That's all I have. I can't go above it, because it works. Another option is going to be a dynamic microphone. It is the Behringer XM8500. This costs around $25. It's a XLR dynamic microphone. And with this, you will need to buy an XLR to XLR cable. That'll cost you maybe 10 bucks. So you're up at $35. Then you'll need the audio interface, M Audio, M Track Solo. That goes for about $50. So now you're at what, $85? Then get a pop filter, $5 or $10, $95. And then a microphone stand, throw in 15 bucks, 110 bucks. You're off to the races. And this thing sounds way better than it has any right to for $25. Then if you want to go higher end, a little bit higher end, keep all the audio equipment the same, the interface, mic stand, XLR cable. Just switch this out for the SE Electronics V7 dynamic microphone. I don't think most people will ever need to upgrade from that if you're just doing spoken word for podcasting. If you want to, you can get different and better sounds, but most of your audience will never know the difference. So those are three what I would classify as beginner options for dynamic microphones. For condenser microphones, I know I give the Yeti a lot of hate because it isn't the best, but if you are doing music, I think it is a killer deal, the Yeti, because you're getting that stereo microphone set so you can do stereo recordings of your acoustic guitar. You can get that condenser sound, not the best condenser sound, but you can get a more lively, realistic condenser sound for your vocals on the electric guitar, all of that. So I think the Yeti can make sense for some people, but for the vast majority of people, probably going to be a better option out there for cheaper.
Yeah, you mentioned the Samsung Q2U earlier, and I know that our friend El Jefe, who is also one of my coworkers here at vidIQ, that was the microphone that he was using in his early creative career, and I know he had nothing but good things to say about it, so that is definitely a good beginner microphone from somebody who knows all about audio as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's go the other way now. Are there microphones out there that you would caution people to avoid when they're first starting out? And I'm not talking about just because they cost more. I'm talking about microphones that aren't as good as people might think they are, even at their price.
Most of the microphones that are really, really bad just don't last very long. As much as I poke fun at the Yeti, I think it does have its use case. I think it does have its place. And just like the vast majority of microphones, I think they have their place. Some microphones that just came out that are absolutely god-awful. This company hates me, even though I rave about their microphone, the XM8500. Behringer just came out with, I think, a set of five different microphones. They're all USB condenser microphones, and they cost about $100 to $150. They took classic studio microphones, microphones that will cost $1,500, $1,000, $3,000. They took the design of them and then crammed a crappy USB capsule in with a crappy USB interface, and they sound terrible. Avoid those. If you go onto AliExpress, I think it is, and you see any of those $50 U87s, avoid those. Any kind of things that look to be too good to be true, chances are they are, and you're going to be wasting your money. But now there are 50 channels that test out audio equipment. So you can find samples on pretty much every microphone on the market, and they will give you the pros, they will give you the cons, they will give you audio samples. So the smartest thing you can do is when you're looking at new equipment to buy, go find reviews, go find audio samples, and watch as many as you can to understand if it is good, if it's bad, what the drawbacks are, what the pros are, and then you won't really end up wasting any money.
There you go, y'all. There you go. Man, you dropped so many gems, man. I appreciate you. Do you have any last bits of advice for creators just getting into the game to maximize their audio?
Not really. Just experiment. That's something that a lot of us forget. We just get set in our ways. We find one thing that works, and then we just stick with it. It should be fun. So try out new things. Just goof around with it. Because as long as the audio isn't distracting, as long as it's not painful to listen to, people are going to enjoy it as long as the content is good. All of this being said, all of this audio talk, still the most important thing is the content. The audio talk is just ensuring that the content that you're making is listenable, is viewable. So don't get distracted. Don't think I'm going to spend all of my money on audio equipment and then people will listen to me. No. You can spend all of your money and have the worst content. Nobody is going to listen. But you can have the best content in the world and you could be using an iPad microphone and people will listen. So the content is still king, but there's no reason not to have good audio at this point. It's so easy. It's so easy and it's so darn affordable. It's so darn affordable.
True audio aficionado right there. That is a true audio person right there, man. Oh my God, it's funny.
It's so affordable. Come on.
Got to. Bandrew podcasting, a pleasure as always, my dude. Before we get out of here, though, let the people know the best place to find you.
Absolutely. The best place to find everything that I do, I have links to everything, bandrewscott.com or podcastage.com, podcastage.com. Either of those links to all of my socials, all of the content that I publish and produce and all of that stuff.
And for those of you all listening, that will be in the show notes, that link. So definitely go down there and take a look and get connected with podcasters, especially if you are trying to figure out the best audio solution for your particular situation. But thank you, podcasting, for joining me tonight. I appreciate you. Thank you all for listening to another episode of Tube Talk presented by vidIQ. For Bandrew, I am Viper, the man about tech. I will be back next week with another episode of Tube Talk presented by vidIQ.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Tube Talk, brought to you by vidIQ. Head over to vidIQ.com/tubetalk for today's show notes and previous episodes. Enjoy the rest of your video making day.